Last week we were discussing the laws of the bracha of Shafianu. Shafianu is a bracha we make basically, just like you make a bracha on cake, and you make a bracha on wine, and you make a bracha on bread, so there's a bracha you make on happiness, and that's Shafianu. But being that we're always happy, so you can't make a bracha all day long, so we discussed last week, I don't want to go through the whole thing again, we discussed last week that there are certain happy occasions that you make a bracha on, different new plateaus one comes to in life, like a new holiday, or when a person gets inside a new house, or a new car, or whatever it is that makes one happy. If it's a very happy occasion, then you make a bracha, and a bracha shafianu. That's what we talked about last week. So it's a bracha on not something as physical as a piece of cake, but it's a bracha yet on something somewhat physical and metaphysical, which is spiritual perhaps, which is happiness. And you make this graph on happiness, and that's a mitzvah and an obligation. So that was last week. This week, we discussed a related bracha, and that's the bracha that we make on miracles. Okay, let me read and translate for you some words of the Talmud. Wisdom of the Talmud.
Where are the
brachas?
Which?
Tractate brachas 54a.
54a, that's important.
Haroa Mokam, I don't even have a Talmud in front of me, this is a quote from Candy or something. Haroa Mokam Shanasa Bonisim Litra. One sees a place where miracles were done for the Jewish people. Omer, so at that time he should say, Baruch Sha'asa Nisim Lavasenu, blessed he who has done miracles for our forefathers, the Mokam has in this place. Or the person sees a place in simple English, the person sees a place where a miracle was done for the Jewish nation. So at that place, he should make a blessing, saying that Baruch Hashem, thank God, that a miracle was done for our forefathers in this place. The Talmud asks, how do you know? We can't just go ahead and make brachas or make up blessings whenever we want to make a blessing. We've discussed this many times. You're not allowed to just make blessings every minute. There has to be a clear tradition or a clear source for making a blessing. So how do you know you make a blessing on a place that a miracle was done? So the Talmud cites a verse in the Torah. Shinemar, because it says, by Yomer Yisro, and Jethro said, this is when Jethro came out of the hills, he came to be with the Jewish people, that was Moses' father-in-law. And he came out to the desert, and so he said, Baruch Hashem, thank God, this was his comment to Moses, Baruch Hashem, thank God, Asher Hitzel asked them that he saved you, he said you because he wasn't Jewish. Jethro himself wasn't Jewish, Moses' father-in-law. So he said, thank... At this time he converted. Yeah. So he said, thank... So he said, thank God that he saved you, Miyad Mitzrayim, from the hands of Egypt, and Miyad Paro from the hands of Pharaoh. So he made a blessing. Jethro was the first one, non-Jew, first one to make a blessing on... First one to make a blessing on a miracle. Which incidentally the Talmud goes on to say later that, which I'm going to quote now, that this was a criticism actually on the Jewish people, that they had 600,000 people. Nobody thought to make a bracha. They were just saved out of Egypt and they were saved from Pharaoh and they had 10 plagues on the Egyptians and the sea just split and the Torah is being given. And comes this non-Jew from the hills, and he says, he makes a bracha. He makes a bracha. He doesn't even make it for something to happen to them. He made a bracha for something there. So, but you never know where, sometimes the most obvious thing, nobody thinks of. Sometimes something is so obvious, like anybody could think of that. But it's the most obvious thing. You need somebody with a great merit, or a great genius, or something, a great tzaddik to come and tell us the simplest obvious. All these people, Moses didn't think of it, Aaron didn't think of it, Joshua didn't think of it, and for no good reason, because as soon as Jethro said it, from there the Talmud learns that we make a bracha on a miracle. that's exactly from Jethro, from this fellow Jethro over here. So the Talmud asks again, Arim al Mish, Arabim Mevarachim, so do you need to say that on a miracle which happened for a multitude, you make a bracha, but a miracle that would happen to an individual, a bracha shouldn't be made, meaning that if we derive the whole law of making this blessing on miracles from Jethro, so Jethro was talking about a miracle that happened to a whole people. So what about a miracle that happens to Steve Rashkin or to Yaakov Haber? What about a little miracle? Did he make a bracha on that or you don't make a bracha on it? So So the Talmud says that can't be. Hare Korilos Adam Mikra Bahalpa Ba'avina. There's a story about a fellow, Talmud says, we know that there's a story about a fellow that went to a place called Avar Yamina, wherever that is, someplace in Babylon. Nuffalo of Arya, and he was attacked by a lion. A lion jumped down on him. Nuffalo Nase, the miracle happened, Venitzel Mimenu, and he was saved from it. So the Talmud. Kishabolus Ne Rava, pretty happy with himself after that. So he went to Rava, who was the rabbi of the place. And he told him, he asked him, what do I do now? I was just saving my life. So he said, Kolzman Shiagilo Samakam Yivarki. So Rava, the rabbi, told him that every time you come to that place, you know, where the lion jumps on you, if I were him, I wouldn't go there. But he said, any time you come to that place, so make a bracha. Make a bracha. When you get to that exact spot, you know, you'll remember the exact rock and the exact tree. And when you get to that place, you make a bracha. What bracha should you make? He said, Baruch she'asoli neis makam hazeh. Thank God that a miracle was made for me in this place.
That's
right. We'll get to Hanukkah in a second. Very good. So we see that on the miracle of an individual, a blessing is made too. Not necessarily on a miracle that happens for the... And then Talmud has another story. There's a fellow by the name of Shemer bar Ravina. Shemer, who was the son of Ravina, and he was going in the Fika Daravai. He was going to a place called Fika Daravai, another place in Babylon, to Samil Amayim, and he was thirsty for water. Nasal and Ace, a miracle happened, Nivra Lo Mayan Mayim Shus, and out of nowhere sprung a spring, and he drank, and he was revived. And another time, the same fellow was going in the Shuksha Mechuzah. The Talmud says he was going to another place in the marketplace of Mechuzah. The novel of Zemel Shoshani was attacked by a crazy camel. No, because a camel, I got a point is that a camel doesn't usually attack. It's not the type of animal that would attack. A boberega, and at that very same minute that this camel started running after this guy, the Talmud says, novel to your bias, a door just opened up. And the Nishna took a bite, and this guy ran inside the house and he was there. So when he came to this place, he said, when he came to the place where the water sprung up, so he always made a bracha. As soon as he came to that place, you know, God did for me a miracle. When he came to the place of the camel, he made another bracha. So we see from here that you make a bracha. You see from here apparently that you make a bracha even on a miracle that happens to the individual. So the Talmud says this is a contradiction because on the one hand we derive from Jethro the whole. In other words, you can't make a bracha just like that. You can't make a bracha. You have to have a source, and the whole source for making a bracha is Jethro. And Jethro was specifically talking about a miracle that happened for the whole Jewish people. You're saved from Pharaoh, saved from Egypt, right? So yet we see rabbis told people to make brachas, even for individual little miracles, right? Like being saved from crazy camels. So what is it, for necessarily for an individual or for a public miracle? So the Talmud answers, a simple answer, Al Shel Rabim Hakol Chayav Lebarach. If it's a miracle that happened to everybody, and it's a very simple answer. If it's a miracle that happened to everybody, so everybody has to make a bracha. Thou Yachid, but if it's an individual miracle, so then who? He has to make a bracha. Ubno, his son has to make a bracha. Ben Bno, his grandson has to make a bracha, and keeps on going like that. So just his descendants have to make a bracha. So in other words, if a miracle happened to you, right, on the corner of Utica and Delaware, so you have to make a bracha. I don't have to make a bracha when I come to that place. But if a miracle happened for the whole Jewish people, like we got out of Egypt or the sea split or something, so then every one of us has, because we're all descendants. We're all descendants from everybody, so we're all grandchildren and we're all great grandchildren. So we all have to make a bracha because a miracle happened to each one of our grandfathers, right? Not so necessarily.
Now here's a question: where is it designated for Rosh Point?
That's an excellent question. Yeah. Well, some of them, it's hard to say. There's the Jordan River, right?
The Jordan River is pretty long.
Right. Not too wide.
Any part of it say okay?
No.
No, okay.
every part is not okay, but you see, it's an interesting question you're asking. I'm hesitating here. The reason I'm hesitating is because the in Shulchan Aruch, in the Code of Jewish Law, it says that now we don't know these places. So we can't make brachos. How do we know? How do we know where water came out of the rock, you know? Even though if you take a tour of Israel, they'll say, this is the rock. This is the rock, you know.
Did this guy come up again? Because by the analogies, he was pretty thirsty for miracles. Water and a camel.
Lucky.
Yeah, maybe it just worked out that way. Yeah. But what I want to say is that with modern excavations, they found a lot of the actual proof to miracles, if it's considered proof. So it became a big, different proof for the fact that this is exactly where Mount Sinai was, for instance, or this is where, which certainly a miracle happened over there, or this is where the Jews crossed the, this is where the sea split. So they say they found proof to these miracles. So it could be that the halacha changed.
You know. Do they give us a definition of what a miracle
yeah,
is?
Yeah, we're going to get into it. Okay, so that's basically the words of the Talmud. And it gives examples of the places where public miracles took place. Just to mention a couple of them. Abros Hayam, where we crossed the sea. There are two seas that split for us. Yeah, one was the Red Sea, the famous one. And then, what? Right, the Yamsuf. And then the and then there was the Jordan.
Jordan split also?
Sure.
I have to look
that
up.
Yeah. Joshua chapter 1.
Joshua chapter 1?
So
yeah. Joshua split also?
Joshua.
Joshua
did it wasn't as big of a deal though because I could have walked right across.
It was, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. If you see the Jordan River, you don't understand what the big deal is. But apparently it was a big deal to me. But they, it says in the Torah in Joshua, the first chapter of Joshua says that the priests, the Kohanim, took the ark, they were carrying the ark, and they put one foot in the water, and the water split, and then they waited there as all the Jewish people passed through. And then they cross and then they cross and went back together. So there was a miracle that happened there too. So if somebody knows where that took place, Marbot Hayam, Marbot Hayardin, if a person sees there was Og Melech HaBashan, this week's parsha, Og was a giant.
Og,
he was in this week's Torah portion, Og, so he was a giant, because Moses was 16 feet tall, came up to his ankle. So he was a giant, so there was a certain stone that he wanted to throw on the Jewish people. There's a hole, pick up the stone to throw it on the whole Jewish people.
One stone,
and it didn't work out for him. He couldn't lift up the stone, so that was a miracle. This was a Medrash, so if you see that stone, which we don't know where it is, obviously. If you see any of these miracles, if you see, Lot's wife, the Torah tells us, turned into a pillar of salt. Now that there is a pillar of salt right there that they say you were there. You heard about it. There is a pillar of salt there, and it is a pillar of salt. You can taste it.
Is it
kosher
salt? You tasted it?
I'll hope so. I hope.
We'll give it the best.
Yeah, I don't think it had polysorbate 16 or whatever the stuff is. But you know the story. She was told not to turn around.
And she wanted to see what to give.
Right, so she turned into salt. So if that is in fact the filler, so you make a brush there. And then here's one that you could see. Thomas Jericho. Well, there was a wall around Jericho that we know fell down.
Well, they found that, didn't they?
Yeah, well, that's there. The wall around Jericho. There's broken, broken wall. Because there, not only that, but the Talmud says something really interesting about that. If you read the verses, the scriptures. So it sounds like they blew the shofar and the walls. Right? Does everyone know the story? They were attacking Jericho. They walked around seven times, and then that's what God told them: walk around seven times and blow the shofar. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to say that the walls will just fall down.
Right.
And the Talmud says that if you look at the words, it doesn't say that it's going to fall down. It says it's going to be swallowed up. They're going to fall in. They're going to go in, and fall down. The Talmud makes that suggestion. And now talking about the excavationists. They found under the ground, like about 30, 40 feet of Jericho wall.
Under the ground?
In other words, just went into the ground.
That's
common in archaeological. Right, doesn't mean anything. That's what I said. Because the proof is that the western walls also went down there.
They went down?
The western wall goes about 30, 40 feet.
Was it sandstone or was buried by debris?
That's happening up there. Well, the sandstone was buried by debris. In Amherst? Doesn't happen on the west side, don't we?
21 inches?
That's what I heard it was. Wow.
Okay, so we have that down. So the question is, let's just get into this for a second. What we have from all this is, what we have from all this halachically is that if we find a place that a miracle was done for the entire Jewish people, we make a bracha. Was created for us a miracle in this place. If a miracle takes place for an individual, so then that individual makes the bracha, and it seems from the miracles that the Talmud describes that these are miracles which were life saving miracles. In other words, he was dying from thirst. Or the camel was chasing him, or a lion jumped him, right? These were miracles that were life-threatening situations, and the miracle saved their life. So the commentaries say that it has to be a type of a miracle to save your life. So if you have a life-saving miracle, so then that individual and all his direct descendants, not his wife or her husband or their father or their grandmother, but your descendants from you, make a bracha when they get to that place. So,
not only male descendants.
No, male or female descendants. So let's just philosophize for a second. What's the point of making this bracha here? Gratitude. So that's the simple explanation, it's just gratitude. But I think it goes a drop deeper than that. Just a drop deeper.
Where's your number?
Oh, that's a little bit better. You got to get the full of the shadow there, the chest. Who's that fever to these things?
Chest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just simply the acknowledgement that a lot of people could attribute such things to just coincidence that, you know, these mm-hmm. things sort of happen, mm-hmm. the acknowledgement with the ultimate power, and, you know, there really isn't such things as fate or coincidence.
Right. So we've got to put all these things together here.
But it really, to get back to the basics, that your life was spanned for purpose, and that purpose is fulfillment.
That's beautiful. So you got to remember why you're alive. You could have gone. But I was thinking a couple of thoughts here, just, you know, simple, very simple thoughts. But when a person needs a miracle, so you say that only a miracle can help me. Person's in the desert, right? And they have nothing to drink. But I mean, you know what a desert is. The desert is.
My sister went to California to the desert with water the first time. They didn't need it. The second time they didn't take it, and they almost didn't make it.
Yeah, if you take a walk in a real desert, it might not last more than 8 hours. You realize the power of a desert. I mean, we don't realize what a desert is. It's a desert. So if a person's going through the desert and needs water, and you get water, you know, it's not an oesis, I mean, it's not a mirage, and it's not an optical illusion. It's a miraculous spring of water. You know, you put your stick in the ground and gushes up water, and it revives you. So when you're walking through the desert, so you think to yourself, only a miracle can save me now. But somehow or another, once you get the water and you drink and you're satiated, so then you attribute it to nature.
Yeah.
that's a common tendency. So even when you're in a situation, you think back, everyone has this experience, including myself, I'm not that, that you, when you're in the situation, you realize that it has to be a miracle to help. But then once the miracle happens, once a miracle happens and that's behind you, so then, somehow or another, you could attribute it to a natural coincidence. We find this in the Torah that the people of Israel were experts at this. They did this all the time. They said, you know, we're hungry, we need food. God sends down food from the heavens, and somehow or another they were able to actually, the commentaries they attribute that to natural phenomena. And everything that happened, even the splitting of the sea.
Even if it's a natural phenomenon, it was rather nice of it to happen at that precise instant.
Well, that's what a miracle is. For a freak of nature, however you want to understand, the fact that it happened exactly when the person needs it is in fact a miracle. However you're going to explain it doesn't take away from the fact that it is a miracle. That's what we have to understand. Now, everything has some kind of a natural explanation, and the Torah always tells us a natural explanation. So I think this is the basic message of I think this is the basic message of the bracha over here, that a person, it's not just important that a person pray for a miracle or realize that you need a miracle beforehand, but they say there's no atheist in a fact. No such thing as an atheist in a fact. When you're in the foxhole, you realize that the only way you're going to be safe is if God watches you. Once you get out of the foxhole and you're sitting in your living room telling the story, so it's very often no longer a miracle. So the obligation of a Jew is, so there's a combination of gratitude. Gratitude is part of it, and but it's more than gratitude. It's realizing and learning and growing from the situation for the rest of your life. In other words, you could constantly be getting from the situation. So whenever you come to that particular landmark, that a miracle in fact happened. So you have to realize over and over and over again, and your children have to realize it, and your grandchildren have to become part of the family tradition. Incidentally, it's a very beautiful thing to create a family tradition. I'm always jealous of families that have a tradition. In our family, we do, that's a nice thing. So you create a family tradition that every time anybody in the family goes by this particular place, they stop there. And I was with somebody, I was traveling with somebody in Israel, and they stopped the car at a particular place. I said, what are we stopping over here? And he got out of the car, and he goes out, and he gets to a certain place on the highway, and he makes a bracha. The prophet said, utterly nasty Muhammad, that a miracle happened to me in this place. So I said, what happened? So he told me that his great grandfather's in Israel. His great grandfather was going over here, and he got mugged by a bandit, right? Or well, whatever it was, a bandit or a Palestinian. Yeah. But this was, you're talking back in 1920, and he got mugged, but he was miraculously saved. Something happened, and the guy, I don't know, some miracle happened. I don't remember the whole story. And the tradition is that all the grandchildren, all the great grandchildren, which number he told me 117, everyone, when they pass by this place and they go out of their way to pass by that place, when they pass into their children.
Is there any particular blessing that we say on the day of our birth to celebrate the miracle of our lives?
No, that's a good thing. I read when you walk by the delivery room, you should make a miracle. The miracle of your
birth.
Yeah, miracles happen every minute.
Right. That's the point.
The miracles happen every minute. But the ones you make a bracha on are miracles that saved you from a life-threatening situation. And it has to be, the other thing it has to have is it has to be an uncommon miracle. In other words, the fact is, and let me just say this, the second thought over here, one thing is that we should always remember, even retroactively, that it was in fact a miracle, it was the hand of God, not attributed to nature as our tendency is. The other thing is that, you see, the truth is that everything that happens, we say this in davening, everything that happens is a miracle. That's a Jewish belief and a correct one. I mean, I think this is something that we should teach the whole world. That everything that happens, every breath that we take is in fact a miracle. You can make a bracha on every breath and it wouldn't be out of place. Every time you eat an apple and you digest it properly, it's a tremendous miracle. And every time your blood makes a rotation around your body, which is how many times a second, it's a tremendous miracle. And somebody whose body is not able to do that will tell you exactly what a miracle it is and how much we take in that. So these are all miracles. And the truth is, our problem is, there's nothing unmiraculous about it. There's absolutely nothing unmiraculous about it. On the other hand, like things which are not as astounding and not as miraculous, really, we're all impressed by. You know, the person in the olden days of age would be able to, make a flash in North Africa, make a flash come out of a tree or something like that. So that wouldn't do anything for anybody, but everybody would be impressed by that kind of a miracle, like somebody could take a rabbit out of their hat. So what do we get from the rabbit out of it? we don't get anything to the rabbit on that. The difference is not how miraculous the two things are. The difference is how common the two things are. That's an important thing to understand. So, one of the obligations we have as Jews is to always be thinking about the fact that everything that happens to us every day and every minute of every day is in fact a miracle. And if that doesn't make us happy, nothing will. I mean, if you think about the miracles that go on for the minute, you wake up, if you wake up in the morning, then it's a nice day automatically. You woke up in the morning. If you realize the miracles that happen every day, so then it's impossible for a person not to be a Torah Jew. It's impossible because you automatically become full of gratitude. You're happy with life and satisfied with life and you have gratitude to God, and then everything follows automatically. Mm-hmm. The problem is because they're so common, we get used to it and we take them for granted. So every once in a while, God does an uncommon miracle just to remind us not only that that's a miracle, but that in fact everything is a miracle. Everything is a miracle. It's like the story in the Talmud about the woman who needed oil for candles, for Shabbos candles. I'm sure we all know she needed oil for Shabbos candles and she didn't have any oil and she was upset and she went to her father and told her father, who was a great rabbi in the Talmud, that all I have is vinegar.
Vinegar.
So he said, light with vinegar. So she said, but vinegar doesn't light. So he said, Misha Amar Sheshemen Yadlik Yomar Shehomet Yadlik, the same one that decreed that oil will light, will decree the vinegar will light. So what was his message? His message was, do you think it's so simple that oil lights? Yeah, or why should oil light? There's no liquid. So for liquid, if you put water, it won't light, and you put oil, it does light. So he said the same God who created this miracle, that oil will light, in this particular case, will create a miracle that that vinegar will light. So that's the point is that he was telling her not only that there could be a miracle of vinegar, but the miracle of the vinegar will teach her about the miracle of the oil. The miracle of the oil is just as big of a miracle, it's not a bigger one, because it makes a nicer light, probably, than the vinegar. It makes a very nice light. It's not that it's less of a miracle, just that it's common, so don't take it for granted. So one of the prerequisites for making a bracha on a miracle is that it has to be uncommon. So a lot of things happen, a lot of miracles happen, but we don't make a bracha on them. It has to be an uncommon miracle. So it's a good thing. We could all think into our lives, and probably miracles have happened, accidents, something, some kind of a miracle happened, if it did, and if it didn't, I hope it doesn't have to. But if a miracle did happen, so we can mark the place and designate it and pass it on in family tradition, that we make a bracha, our children make a bracha, our children's children make a bracha for all future generations. So let's say, for instance, let's say somebody was destitute and in terrible trouble and suddenly won the lottery. It's a miracle. So where do you make the bracha? That's what you're asking. Where do you make the bracha?
Well,
the dog is right. There's no life-threatening situation. Yeah. It might have been.
That's
what nailed
the mafia money.
All right.
He didn't have any food. I mean, it's no worse than the guy in the desert without water, right? Same thing. Right? Same thing. Something could be the same thing, depending on who your neighbors are. What did he say? He built a mosque over there?
Yeah.
Leave
it with a neon
sign. So what she's asking about is, what if you're in an airplane and someone tries to kill you?
And it doesn't crash.
And someone tries to kill you in the lift.
Once you hear it, you open that plane.
And you ask for the coordinates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So where do you make the drop off?
Somebody, you got the rabbi's
stuff. Oh, it does relate to a place, but you just can't get to that place.
Especially if you had coordinates.
How do you know if you fly across it?
But I presume, I presume it doesn't have to be, the idea is that there's something about the place that's symbolic of the miracle that's the place.
Or in the case of Hanukkah, it's time mark, the place.
Yeah. Hanukkah is a good example. Hanukkah and Purim. Hanukkah and Purim. That's one time we all make the bracha. That a miracle is done. But that's not a place. You see, that's a good example. That your point. Also, Nisim Lavoseinu, that a miracle happened to our forefathers. Hayamim Ahenu Zmanazeh. From their time all the way up to our time, because in other words,
is that what that actually translates to?
Probably. So, what's interesting there is that there's a good. Yeah. So what miracle are we making the brach on over there? A lot of miracles happen.
I think that with the miracle, if you look a little, I always tend to go on. You want to lean a little bit further into the next step is that the miracle isn't only what actually occurred when you celebrate it. The miracle is the link of the generation to generation, the remembrance of it, and that becomes...
No question about it. That's why the grandson makes the same bracha as the grandfather.
That's
it makes the exact same bracha. Also, leading us to Mukhman.
And that miracle occurs in your heart.
Yeah, well...
You know what I mean? There's always a...
You're going too far. But
there's always a time and there's always a place. It's the remembrance within the individual.
But you make it at a certain place.
Right. I understand. But the linkage that it can go on is a miracle in itself.
There's a halacha also that we don't have the concept today of a Rebbe, nothing with a Hasidic Rebbe, not a Rebbe, someone who teaches a person, you know, all their Torah. So a Rebbe has the same law as a father or a mother. And in other words, the reason with a father and a mother, the obvious reason is that, in other words, it's a miracle. If my great-grandfather, if a miracle happened to him, and took him out of a life-threatening situation, that's the reason for my existence today. Not the purpose, but I mean, that's the only reason I exist, because of that miracle. Right? In other words, if my great-grandfather would have been killed at that moment, so it's possible that... Unless I was born, but basically, in other words, a miracle goes down to the descendants. So the Talmud says that if a person has a Rebbe, and a miracle happens to their Rebbe, so just like you have to make a bracha on a place where a miracle happened to your father, your mother, your grandfather, you have to make a bracha where a miracle happened to your Rebbe too. I'll tell you a way out story if you want to hear a way out story. But my Rebbe, who's a great tzaddik, is he's always questioning. He does something that absolutely nobody else in the world does.
What's his name?
Rabbi Scheinberg. So what he does is he wears a lot of tzitzit. I don't know if I've mentioned it here before.
How can you wear a lot of tzitzit?
Where's one? Three, maybe 100.
One over the other?
One on top of the other. Top of the other.
What does he look
like? Yeah, he looks like a football player. That's a football player. He weighs 92 pounds. He looks like
91 pounds of power.
Yeah. He does it. I don't know why he doesn't.
How does he get around?
It's difficult.
No, I mean, he does it all day.
He's so good. Yeah.
So what's the halacha wearing that many?
Well, the simple point is that when you put on a pair of tzitzit, it's a mitzvah.
Right.
And when you put on two pairs of tzitzit, it's another mitzvah.
When
you put on three, it's three mitzvahs. I mean, that's so simple. All it says in the Torah is that when you wear a four-cornered garment, you should put tzitzit inside. So if you wear two four-cornered garments, so you put on two pairs, you put on tzitzit on all of them, right? So some people call it crazy probably, you know, like the but that's he's my Rebbe and does it in 5 seconds. So he wears all these this is a true story. I mean, this is a true story that we all know to be a true story, that he was driving in a he was riding to a the whole story in the case, he was riding to a wedding. And if anybody's been in Israel, you know what a tender is. You know what a tender is?
T-E-N-D-E-R.
It's the name of a type of a van. It doesn't really make a difference. But what it is you have a cab in the front and a truck in the back, and everybody's got one for some reason in Israel. And the seats fold down in the back, and 8 people sit there. And there's little signs that they're travelers. No seating. That's a tender. And they don't have vans like here for some reason. They just have tenders. So that's the way it is. So, always when the yeshiva would go someplace, you know, as a group, you know, or some people from the yeshiva would go someplace as a group, this was in my day, this story took place. I mean, I was in the thing. So everybody would sit in the back, and of course the driver and the Rosh Yeshiva would sit in the front. There's only room for 2 people. So one time we were going to this wedding, I was in that car. I was in a car right behind, immediately behind. So we were going to a wedding in B'nai Brak from Jerusalem. So and it was a regular setup with the Rosh Yeshiva. And then they picked up somebody, and his wife wanted to come along. So his wife was pregnant. So the Rosh Yeshiva insisted that she sits in the front and he sits in the back with everybody else, and it was the whole, you know, the thing. No, he's in the back. He's in the back.
Yeah.
But in any case, he ended up sitting in the back, and she ended up sitting in the front. And it was pouring rain. It was an open tender, and we were driving right behind it, and the rain was just terrible. And
no canvas.
There's a canvas, yeah, but it's open in the back. No, it's not a canvas. It's metal.
Okay.
But it's open in the back. There's no doors or anything in the back. It's just a little bar. So anyway, so we were driving, and we were someplace in the area of before Tel Aviv, and the tender turned over.
Oh.
It was a terrible thing. The tender turned over. I mean, I watched it. I watched the tender turn over. It was a terrible feeling. First of all, my friends and my Rebbe, and it was horrible. I went into a ditch, and so we obviously stopped the car immediately. and went out, and everybody was fine. Nobody had a scratch, which in itself was a miracle.
Right.
The tender, everybody fell, the way the thing went, everybody fell on top of the Rosh Yeshiva, on top of the Rabbi Scheinberg. And what happened was the thing had smashed in such a way that the metal had bent. Oh, this I saw by an eye. The metal had bent and would have actually killed him, and it went through every one of his systems except for the closest one. Is that a layout story? So everybody, that was 11 years ago, 12 years ago, the whole yeshiva, when they get to that place, stops and makes a brush.
That's
going to
be interesting.
Yeah. But in 100 years from now, you see, because his students and the student students and the student students will make the bracha there, and you'll say, you'll know why. I saw it happen. Make the bracha. Yeah. But I know the exact time when they make the bracha. So that's a good example. No, but I mean, that's a way out story. I mean,
but it's a thing like that, you know?
Yeah. Anyway.
I don't think the odds are there for somebody to say it's a meaning.
Yeah, but that's the miracle, yeah. Okay,
if he didn't make a bracha?
If
he did make a bracha?
If he didn't, he lose a mitzvah. He lose a mitzvah. He lose a chance to grow. See, if you think about it each time. Think about the story each time. So each time you think about he officiated the wedding then. That's another. He went to the wedding, and he officiated the wedding. And I remember the whole damage of the whole thing was that he lost his glasses. Everybody was okay. He lost his glasses. And there was another guy, I don't know why this took my let me do with the story, but there was another guy who was like an eccentric type of fellow, and he had to keep a little change person here. And he lost his change person until today, talking about it. he lost his change person.
How did he get it by his great grandfather?
Yeah, something with the change person.
Were you late in July?
Yeah, we were late, but we couldn't be late by definition because he was okay.
Yeah.
Baby was okay. Everything was okay except for the truck. And the change person has glasses. But I remember that we hitchhiked. There's more to the story if you want to hear it. There's more to the story because this car that we were in only held 3-4 people. And
2 people hanging off the
car. No, it was an interesting thing. What happened was.
Did you have to have a bus come by that had no passengers?
No. What happened was we were hitchhiking, which is common. Yeah, it's not an uncommon thing. Well, there was only about 10 people. So they were hitchhiking, and a car drove by, and then the car came backing back, and who it was going to the same wedding, was the Rav of Jerusalem. It was the Rav of Jerusalem, who drove right by, and had room for one, and didn't stop for hitchhikers, but then saw Rav Scheinberg, so immediately realized, what second was that? Yeah. So they pulled back illegally on the expressway, and they picked him up. So Rav Scheinberg, this is an interesting punchline to the story over here. This Rav Scheinberg had come from America, and he had a halachic opinion that when traveling from Jerusalem to B'nai Brak, there's a certain bracha we're going to learn about. There's a certain prayer that you say, traveler's prayer, Shul Tadera. Certain traveler's prayer you say, going from one place to the other. But there's all kinds of conditions as to when you say it. So Rav Scheinberg's opinion was that you don't say it from Jerusalem to B'nai Brak, because his house is all along the way, and you don't say it. Right. And the custom of Jerusalem is that you do say it. So he became controversial in this respect. Well, not greatly controversial, but it was a controversy that he came into Jerusalem and he said that you don't say it. So he got the ride from the chief rabbi of Jerusalem, the chief Ashkenazic rabbi of Jerusalem, and told him what happened and the whole story. So he told him that, you see, you don't go against the custom. The custom is you say this bracha, so you say this prayer, so you say the prayer. So he changed his halachic opinion. So that's another thing that everybody in our yeshiva we say it's still Tadar. So the custom in our yeshiva is that when you get there, you say two things. You say the bracha on miracles, and you say the prayer, and you should turn over and pray. Okay. Do you have anything else to say? Okay, so that's it. So to sum up, basically, what we end up with is if an unusual miracle that gets us out of a life-threatening situation occurs. So then we make a bracha and everybody makes a bracha there. A miracle happens for the whole of Israel, which incidentally didn't necessarily have to happen in biblical day. It could have, you know, if today, a whole, if it's possible, like if a whole miracle happens for all of Israel, you know, a lot of people say that the days that they captured Jerusalem and those things are days that you make a bracha too. But, you know, that's a big controversy, whether it happened for all of Israel or just for the soldiers or whatever. Should only those individuals make it, or should we all make it? But it's difficult now for us to have that kind of situation because Jews are spread out all over the place. You see, when in biblical times and maybe in future times, you know, we'll all be in one group, so it's possible for us all to be suffering and then all to be saved, or it's possible for the sea to split for the whole Jewish people. But now that we're in Gullus, in the Gola, so it's impossible, basically impossible, I think, for a miracle to happen for everybody, you know, at the same time that we should make a bracha. But if it should, so then we will make a bracha. Then all of Israel will make a bracha for all future generations. If it happens to an individual, so then their own lineage makes a bracha. Okay, thank you.